two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of
Fan Effect.
Joining me this time, I'm Andy Farnsworth, and joining me for this one, Christian Odland, a writer for Geek Tyrant and Nerdist, and also One Minute Critic on Instagram and YouTube. Christian, welcome back.
Thank you. So happy to be here talking X-Men.
That's right, and that's what we'll be talking about today. X-Men Dark Phoenix, the final movie in the, really, it's the finale of two kind of big things. It's our two eras, at the very least. Not only is it the last X-Men movie in the line that started back in 2000, it might be the last time you see that iconic 20th Century Fox logo and fanfare before a movie starts, since that company is now owned by the Disney Empire. How you feel about that?
I mean, there's a little sadness, but most of it is whatever. I don't really care.
Really? You don't miss
like,
the
I feel like, I mean, have they said that marquee is going away?
I've heard that there's no reason to keep it because they don't have that branding to release it under. They're going to still use Fox Searchlight. And
okay, well.
I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they'll use that for their R-rated stuff. I don't know. But I've heard rumors both ways.
It would be a little sad because it is a pretty iconic. It's one of the most iconic ones, so yeah.
So the series started back in 2000 with X-Men. This is the 10th. Or the 12th, or the 13th, depending on if you count Deadpool, and if you count Once Upon a Deadpool as a second version of Deadpool 2, which seems to me fitting that there's no real definitive number of X-Men movies, because that's kind of, they're the originators to me. To me, X-Men is the original superhero film, with apologies to Blade, with apologies to Meteor Man, and I mean modern superhero movie, I guess, is what I should say, because of course there was Batman, of course there was the Superman movies, but of the
honestly, I don't think there would be an MCU if X-Men didn't. It wouldn't be the way it is if it wasn't for X-Men. We can honestly agree on that, I think.
Absolutely. And you know what, to say that Fox didn't use it right, I think there's an argument to be made both ways, and I think that's one of the things we'll talk about a little bit later. So what we'll do is we're going to talk about X-Men Dark Phoenix, just to give you a heads up of what you'll be listening to. This is full of spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to know what happens, make sure you see the movie and then come back and check us out. But we are going to talk spoilers just because I'm learning, especially with these kind of movies, Christian, and maybe you're finding this as you do your one-minute reviews on Instagram and YouTube, it's getting harder and harder to talk about a movie without at least giving something away. And for somebody who wants zero spoilers, that's almost impossible.
Especially with a franchise that's this long. You know, if it spans more than three movies, it's kind of hard to not. You kind of almost have to in some regards.
Yeah, so there will be heavy spoilers, so we don't want to ruin it for somebody. Though, to be fair, I'm not sure there's any one particular there's maybe one big thing that could be considered a spoiler, but I even when it happened, I wasn't that surprised by it.
Yeah.
But anyway, just to be fair, so that's our warning, and so come back and listen after you've seen the movie. So let's talk X-Men Dark Phoenix, Christian. Let's go with the good and the bad. Well, first of all, what was your overall, really, you know, if you could summarize it quickly, what would you overall say your takeaway was?
My overall takeaway was I was expecting a lot of closure, and I don't feel like we really got it. But if just to dumb things down, you know, it has had some really good action set pieces. You know, I would say some of the best in the X-Men franchise. The story was very low tier as far as I think, it wasn't as interesting or compelling. And like you said, things happen, and you don't really care that much, which is kind of sad.
Right, for something that's been around 20 years and that really got us excited about superhero movies in the first place.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I would say as far as on the spectrum of X-Men movies, I think it falls right in the middle.
Okay. And that's fair. And I gave it, my overall rating for it was 2.5. I gave it an extra half star because I was, you know, it has such a stacked cast. Like, that to me was where I felt the biggest disconnect, was looking at the cast and looking at how they had played those characters in previous movies. At least, other than maybe Sophie Turner, the rest of them, like Jennifer Lawrence, just looked like, how quick can I get out of this? Which is something I've never noticed in a character before as I've watched a movie, but it really seemed obvious. And maybe it didn't help that I remembered her saying how much she hated getting in the blue makeup. And that she was after Apocalypse, she made it sound like she wasn't going to do it again. So the fact that we got her in this at all is kind of a bonus. But that was in the back of my mind as I was watching, you know, what they had her do and her performance. And so,
yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I mean, if on paper you look at this cast and you think, wow, that's a lot of talented actors. And honestly, I feel like a lot of that was wasted.
And the only ones who got to really act was Jessica Chastain and Sophie Turner.
Yeah, that's pretty much. And, you know, we got some James McAvoy, but even that wasn't anything noteworthy for him. I feel like, for me, the biggest disappointment was Michael Fassbender. Like, he's been brilliant in the role of Magneto, but we barely get anything from him in this movie. And, it's really a shame, because it's a waste of talent, if you ask me.
He does flex his neck better than anybody, though, to show strain.
That's true.
He's still the champion of that. But you're
true.
Right, and that's just, to me, as I walked out, I thought, I'm happy to see a better movie than The Last Outing, because I really didn't. I really ended up not liking Apocalypse as much as I wanted to.
Agreed.
But I was also sad to see. It just felt like the franchise was out of gas, and that left me feeling a little disappointed. And I don't know if that's any one particular person's fault. I don't. And maybe you could blame the Marvel Cinematic Universe for redefining how to do a superhero movie and making something a must see. Every chapter a must see, and X-Men kind of getting left in the dust. But I just, that was my thought, was like, you know, for what was once such an exciting and enjoyable series, I just didn't feel that. I was like, all right, I mean, I'll see X-Men, but it certainly wasn't the excitement I felt when I went to the first X-Men.
Yeah,
and it definitely wasn't the excitement I felt when I went to the second one.
Yeah, I think you're right, because At the time those came out, that was it. That was the pinnacle of superhero movies we were getting. And now it's like in a way, this franchise is kind of like that new used car you got in high school, which is your first car. You're like, yeah, this is great. And then the MCU comes along, and it's like the brand new, fresh off the lot, 2009. You know what I mean?
That has wings and can fly.
Yeah, you can like compare it to that, where there wasn't anything as good as the MCU to compare it to at that point. So back then, it was the pinnacle of superhero films.
And so here we are now, almost 20 years later, and we wrap it up with Dark Phoenix. So now we'll get into some specific spoilers. To me, the stuff that I liked about this, Christian, was I actually liked this movie. Felt a little restrained. Now, we complained about the actors not giving enough, but I did appreciate, at least from writer Simon Kinberg, writer and director. Did you know he helped write the first X-Men movie?
Yeah, I saw he was a producer on a bunch of them too.
So he's been in the franchise. Interestingly enough, he wasn't a writer of the first one. He was a writer of The Last Stand. So this is the second time he's helped with the Phoenix story. And I guess we could start with that. This was a better take on the Phoenix story, I thought, because first of all, it was the main focus and not sort of a side-horned plot. They weren't trying to run two different stories at the same time. It was the story. But I actually appreciated the restraint to where it wasn't one planet-leveling battle after another. And
yes,
it had a little bit of a slower pace. There was some internal conflict. And
it was like a build-up.
Yeah, there were dilemmas. There was strife among them, but not the punch kind of strife. Say what you will about whether or not the Beast and the love arrow, I call it an arrow because it's not a triangle unless Beast and Magneto love each other, but it's an arrow where Beast and Magneto both love Mystique.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that provided a little bit of internal tension to where it now became believable that at least Magneto wanted to kill Jean Grey. And Beast to a certain extent. I guess I'd have to rewatch Apocalypse again just to reset where their whole relationship was. I remember there being something to it, but
hey, if you want to rewatch that movie, go for it.
So I really liked the restraint, and I thought the tweaks to the Phoenix story, since it had already been told once before, were appropriate. They were in keeping, at least for a large part, to the original classic story that was in the comics written by Chris Claremont. That's one of the most iconic comic stories of all time. And I liked that train battle at the end. Was really well done.
It was very well done.
And I have to
I don't know about you, but I loved that scene. But for some reason, that to me at the time, it didn't feel like it was going to be the climactic action scene. It felt like it was going to be like the build-up to something even bigger, but then it turned out to be the biggest thing.
Well, and I had read somewhere online, because people had asked about, they reshot the final third of the movie.
Yeah.
Originally, apparently, the battle was all going to take place in space, and then they changed it, and the rumor is it was because Captain Marvel's big battle was in space, and they didn't want to copy that. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. It would make sense if it was true. But they decided to set it on the train, and I thought that it worked really well. I mean, train fights have been a staple of movie going since the beginning, so that's kind of a cool callback. But it was nice to see the X-Men fighting someone besides themselves for a change.
Right. No, I agree.
And so
it was nice to see something that wasn't mutant on mutant violence. It was like some opposing force.
Yeah, where they could, and when they all just sort of decided to team up, that was pretty cool.
Yes.
You know, because it looked like they were going to fight each other for a minute, and they did a little bit, of course, but that, when they could really just unleash on the aliens, where you could see, like, the full X-Men's power unleashed, like Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. Nightcrawler was pretty cool when he got going.
Yeah. Yeah, when his switch got flipped, he just went off, yeah.
Anything,
very cool.
Anything you liked in particular that I didn't mention?
No, I think I agree with you for the most part. For me, the parts of this film that really shined were the action sequences, the fighting, and the show of mutant powers. A lot of the other stuff really was kind of bland, and even the romantic dilemmas and stuff. I didn't buy it. Like, it just felt kind of mailed in a little bit. But you know, if it weren't for those great action fights and sequences, I think I would have given this movie a much, much, much lower score.
I can appreciate, I mean, after the level of destruction that Apocalypse went through,
mm-hmm.
just got to, that's when I coined the personal term, the monopoly level of damage. You know, how people have said, like, when you buy a house, what's the difference between 400 and 500,000? At some point, it's all just monopoly money. Or when an athlete makes, you know, you can't understand how an athlete who makes 14 million is upset that he's not making 16 million. Because to you, it's just fake at that point. I mean, that's not a real amount that you'll ever have to deal with. And so the level of destruction in Apocalypse got to the point where I was like, I'm not even sure I care. It was the same thing I felt about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. There was so much destruction on such an unbelievable level that you couldn't care about it anymore. You know, Independence Day, you were like, oh my gosh, look at those iconic things going down. And yes, they ended up destroying half the world, but you watched it happen in small chunks, for lack of a better word, digestible chunks as a viewer, to where you could be like, no, that's that famous thing. But in Apocalypse, they just were like, they were like reshaping the world, and people were probably dying by the millions, and then you're trying to concentrate on this little fight between four or five people. It got to the point where I was like, I can't care about the damage, because it no longer has any meaning for me. It's the difference between the D-Day scene on the beach in Saving Private Ryan, which, and this was obviously intentional, but people were just getting mowed down and it was chaos. And then the scene in Saving Private Ryan where they're fighting in the church tower and the German overpowers the guy from Jersey and just stabs him like while he's shushing him, which is, to me, still one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen in a movie. But it's the difference in how you feel between the two. When nameless people are getting mowed down, you kind of only care to a certain extent. But when it's somebody that you know and then it goes in a really personal way, that's much more disturbing. And And so I actually thought that having it toned down to non-super levels of destruction made me care a little bit more about what was happening.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, so how about some bads? I mean, you've obviously hinted on a few things, and maybe you're going to have to show some restraint here.
Yeah.
But to me, the biggest complaint, and this is the complaint that I've had throughout the entire series, and I will touch on it again later, was Cyclops. When will my favorite character get his big screen due? Ty Sheridan did literally almost nothing. He got to shoot his I-beams a couple times, and he got to say, hey, let's stick up for Jean. But he didn't get to do anything.
I was joking with my friend. I was like, so I guess Cyclops is Xavier's new wheelchair, because the whole movie, all he did was carry Xavier around.
Well, that's just hurtful, because Cyclops is my favorite guy, and they've never figured out how to use him. I didn't like, we touched on it a little bit, the lack of energy from the cast, especially Fassbender and Jennifer Lawrence. I thought that I didn't really like how they didn't give much beyond a very quick mention of what the Phoenix Force is, considering it became such a powerful thing. I mean, we got that little bit of explanation from Jessica Chastain, but not much. And granted, they were still going more for the internal strife, so that's a little bit okay. But that was one of the things I didn't like is, you know, if this gives her unlimited power, what the heck is it?
Yeah.
And then this is only a minor complaint because, like I said, I loved how the X-Men and the mutants finally got to fight someone besides themselves. But the bad guys were really just cannon fodder.
No, yeah, you knew nothing about them. You knew nothing about their abilities.
I still don't know what race they are.
What was the main villain's name? We don't even know the name.
It was like Vuk or something like that.
Like,
and I think I had to look it up on the internet.
Yeah, they say it one time, and you're just like, okay.
And obviously it was meant to. And so that's the thing. So, again, these are maybe some writing choices where maybe they thought the same thing we did, which is let's have them fight somebody else. But if we want the balance of the movie to be over this strife of the internal battle between Jean, who she wants to be, you know, I did think that it was pretty touching the way Xavier, you know, says, you're not broken, Jean, and that ends up being one of the things that helps kind of snap her out of her fever dreams about power. Was even as Jessica Chastain was telling her that everyone was treating her as a woman in power, as if something she needed to be fixed, and it didn't help that they were fighting each other over what to do with her. You know, that's got to make somebody feel like, oh, so I don't even get any choice in this, and hence her desire to separate from everything. But
yeah, and it also bothered me slightly. I'll get into mine more so, but I'm kind of playing off yours. It bothered me slightly that, spoiler alert, when Mystique was killed, it was traumatic for everybody, but then they just kind of blew it off after a while. They're like, oh, whatever.
They had the funeral. You had the scene between Beast and Xavier where Beast is finally lashing out at Xavier.
Right. But it didn't seem to affect anyone else.
Yeah, the students are like, "Wait, what? She's gone? Oh no!"
Yeah. I don't know.
You could see the direction. All right, everybody, look sad.
Yeah.
And all the kids are like, "Oh, how about this? This is gonna take forever." Okay, that's good enough.
And the truth is, they could have just lied to the kids and be like, oh, she's shaped as Scott right now. Oh, she's shaped as Jean right now.
I didn't even think of that, but that would be pretty funny. Well, and that actually, if we're going to do a little bit of nerd nitpicking, technically Mystique cannot be bludgeoned or stabbed to death because as a shapeshifter, she can move all of her essential organs around.
Oh, interesting.
And so the only way you could kill her is to vaporize her. You couldn't just like stab her to death because if you stab her in the heart, she shapeshifts her heart out of the way. And I guess maybe the argument is that the Phoenix Force was so quick and powerful that it stabbed her before she could move it anywhere. But theoretically, the shapeshifters are hard to kill. You can't shoot her because she can just shift stuff around, create a second heart if she needs to, kind of a thing. But
true.
That was something I noticed in the movie. And I didn't have anyone with me that was nerdy enough to say that to.
Right.
So I'm glad I got a chance to air that here. All right. So what were any other particular dislikes that you had?
For me, I'm like you. I don't know. I'm pretty nitpicky on continuity. And it always bothered me that Storm has this accent, because X-Men 1, 2, and 3, she doesn't have an accent, and that all is supposed to take place after all this, right?
Right. So wait, she yep. didn't have an American accent?
Yeah, she had like a South African accent in this and in Apocalypse, like totally different.
But if this is before those, then she could still have time to get her American accent.
Yes,
down.
You can argue that. That's the one caveat. But the bigger one, and this remains to be unexplained, if Mystique's dead, why is she in 1, 2, and 3?
Because they've changed the timeline?
What, but did they? I mean, they didn't specifically go into that, did they?
The real question is, if Mystique
That's
is dead,
really confused me.
If Mystique is dead, then she should not be in the scene at the end of Days of Future Past when we get to see Marsden and Famke Janssen as Scott and Jean again.
Yes.
And technically, we probably shouldn't have seen Jean in that scene since...
That's what I was going to say, her too. She's the other one. So, I mean,
but you did see that Phoenix fly through the sky.
Right. I mean, yes. But that this these little continuity things like that, that aren't clearly addressed, really create problems for me.
Well, here's the explanation. They're not doing anymore, so it doesn't matter.
Right. And that's why I just kind of did.
Does
I was
bug.
Like, whatever. I was like, they're done, whatever.
It's like the last week of school. Yeah, there's going to be some stuff, but the amount of energy you're going to put into it and the amount you're going to care is a whole lot less than on the first week and around the midterm break or the midwinter break or your junior year of high school when you do care about
right.
college and your last week of your senior year of high school when you don't because it's all set.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that's let's take a break here for a sec, and then when we get back... the series is now done with 20th Century Fox. Well, technically, they still have the New Mutants in 2020. But we're going to go over how we thought Fox handled the X-Men property, what we liked, and what we think they could have done better. Fan Effect, Andy Farnsworth and Christian Odland were talking about X-Men. We've talked about Dark Phoenix now, and we're 20 years into the X-Men franchise. This is really the end of the line from the characters played by Patrick Stewart, James McAvoy, Ian McKellen, Michael Fassbender, etc., etc. So let's talk about what, you know, it's the end of an era, so let's revisit some of it. We have, again, I mentioned earlier, 10 to 13 movies, depending. Here's the order that they happened in. X-Men, which came out in 2000. X2, X-Men United, which was 2003. X-Men The Last Stand, 2006. X-Men Origins Wolverine, 2009. And that's really those four make up the first half. Then you had X-Men First Class, where you introduced them as a younger age. That was in 2011. The Wolverine in 2013. X-Men Days of Future Past in 2014, X-Men Apocalypse in 2016, and Logan 2017, X-Men Dark Phoenix in 2019, and then, of course, you've got the three Deadpool movies, well, two, Deadpool in 2016, Deadpool 2 in 2018, and then Once Upon a Deadpool, which I consider a separate movie personally, also in 2018. Christian, let's revisit then some of the series over the last 20 years of X-Men and 20th Century Fox. So how about this? Let's go with, what are your top three favorite movies of the franchise so far?
Well, for me, and sadly, my top three don't have X-Men in the title.
Really?
I've got, Logan is probably my favorite of all of them.
And I got to give full confession, that is the only one I haven't seen yet.
Oh my gosh, Andy. Okay.
I didn't even want to admit that, but it'll make sense when that one's not in my top three yet because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that one is great. And it really kind of works as a complete standalone too, so you don't necessarily, it doesn't feel like it has direct ties to all the others. So Logan would be my number one, and then I would just go with Deadpool 1 and 2. Those are my three favorite.
Okay.
If you wanted me to put an X-Men title in there, I would say probably of all the X-Men movies, my favorite one was Days of Future Past, closely followed by First Class.
Okay, and that's fair. My three, and again, I leave Deadpool out of it for this reason alone. By them breaking the fourth wall, to me, that I as much as I enjoyed it and as much as I laughed at it, and I did like them, I look at them as side movies. Like, they're not really part of the canon, even though that they are. But like when Deadpool's like, is it McAvoy or Stewart? I can never keep this continuity straight.
It's almost like a spoof.
It is. And so I'm just going to go with the 10 movies that technically are canon and that technically relate. I mean, we didn't see anybody from Deadpool. We didn't get a mention of Negasonic Teenage Warhead. As soon as Colossus went over to Deadpool, he stopped existing in the X-Men movie universe. So I'm going to leave those out for that reason alone. And again, not because I didn't like them. It's just because I'm going with X-Men continuity. So my three are X2, X-Men United. I just thought that the whole emotional wrap-up with Famke Janssen, like, essentially holding off the dam breaking while she lifts up the X-Jet to get out of there, while she has to hold James Marsden in his seat. Like, that's the first time. Like, I got tears in my eyes. I'm not going to lie. 2003, I got tears in my eyes watching that movie because it was such an emotionally well-done moment. And again, this was only really the second good superhero movie we'd had since the terrible Batman and Robin. And so that to me, was the emotional high point of the entire series. So number two, Days of Future Past, because it brought everything back together. I really liked that it mixed the two worlds. I thought they did justice to the storyline and kind of were able to rub out some stuff that wasn't that great. There's two ways to rub out things that aren't that great. You can have a whole movie about it, like Days of Future Past, or you could just have a post-credit scene in Deadpool where he just goes through and kills people.
Yeah, one thing that was cool about Days of Future Past, I really liked how you saw the mutants synergizing their powers, you know, like combining the use of their powers to fight the Sentinels, you know, like...
Well, like what we saw Thor and Captain America doing in Avengers.
Exactly.
Yeah, make two things that are powerful into something really powerful. That's a good point. And then number three for me was The Last Stand. Just kidding. It's either the original X-Men or First Class, just because they did a great job of setting the table. And think about this. If the first X-Men wasn't good, and in retrospect, it's not the best of the series, but it was good enough and faithful enough to the story, and they cast it right to where we could get more, and then it could start to build positive word of mouth among not just the comic book fans, but among regular, quote-unquote, regular people, to where these superhero movies become something that are worth investing in, and Marvel starts to think, hey, instead of letting these other studios have all the money, what if we did it ourselves? And maybe after The Last Stand, that intensified, because that happened in 2006. And of course, Iron Man was the first one released from Marvel Studios in 2008. But they did enough to get the ball rolling. And so I want to give it, I call it my third favorite, because I did. I loved it when I left it. That was right at the end of the 90s when the X-Men were the kings of the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And between the cartoon and their comic books and everything. So they did enough justice that we could have something like First Class later on, that we could have Days of Future Past, and then eventually we could get Deadpool. Granted, they almost screwed Deadpool up by ruining him in X-Men Origins. But so those would be my top three, X2, Days of Future Past, and then either X-Men or First Class.
No, I agree with that. Those are good calls.
All right, so then let's look at it this way. What things did 20th Century Fox get or do correctly in handling the X-Men property for 19 years? What's one of your top ones?
Well, like you've mentioned, barely, I feel like they did a really good job with the casting. Most specifically, Hugh Jackman. I mean, I think...
Yes.
I really think Wolverine's casting was pivotal on the success of the franchise.
Very good point. And interestingly enough, we fans complained a little bit initially because he was too tall.
Yeah, he was too tall, too thin. too non-American.
Well, he's Canadian in the comics, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, he was really a vital part of this whole thing. And, you know, besides the one Wolverine movie, we got a lot of good, I think, good storylines and performances from the character.
Yeah, he had one line in First Class, right? But it was the funniest line of the movie.
It was one of the most memorable moments of the movie, yeah.
We can't repeat it on this podcast, but it was
pretty
awesome.
By the way, just quick side note, when Scott Lang drops the F-bomb, it was a little surprising, first of all.
Did I miss that? Did he drop the F-bomb?
Yeah, he drops the F-bomb when they're facing off against Magneto's troop outside of the... that building where Jean's with that alien lady. But anyway, when he said it, I just turned to my friend and in the voice of
Oh,
Tony
do you mean
Stark,
Scott
said,
Summers?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah,
you sorry. Threw me off. I was like, I don't remember Ant-Man dropping an F-bomb bomb in any of the movies. Did I miss that?
I'm so sorry. Scott Summers, yeah. I turned to my friend and I just said language, you know, just a reference to the AMC. The Avengers.
Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cyclops. We're going to get to that one in just a sec. But I agree with you on the casting. Jackman is definitely the key, as in people are still wanting him to play Wolverine even though he's done. That, to me, means that they got the casting right. And you're right, because they made the choice to have Wolverine lead the team, which at the time I was a little bugged because, like I said, Cyclops is my favorite character. But I also, I get why it worked, and I get why they made that choice. And I agree, but I thought that the casting was key. They had to get certain ones right, you know? We've had a Beast that was Kelsey Grammer in one movie and Nicholas Holt in the others. We've had James Marsden and Ty Sheridan play Cyclops. We've had Famke Janssen and Sophie Turner play Jean Grey. And, you know, each of them is okay. I don't think any of them was more definitive than the others, personally. Although I do like James Marsden as Cyclops a little better as far as how I imagined the jawline and looking and stuff.
Right.
I thought he fit that better. But they had to get, because the whole balance of everything rested on Magneto and Xavier, they had to get that casting right. And I thought they nailed those both times.
Yes.
Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen. One of my favorite lines from the whole series still is when in X2... when they're on the plane and the guy with the fire says to Magneto, they say you're a villain. And just the way Ian McKellen said, is that what they say? Like, I can't even imitate it, but I just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Patrick Stewart, of course, that was who everybody was thinking the entire run of the 90s was, oh, if they could get Captain Picard as Xavier, it would be perfect. And they did, and he was great. But I also liked the younger versions, like McAvoy. I didn't know he was such a good actor, and I was introduced to him in First Class. You saw what he did in Split and what he did in whatever the movie was this year. Glass. Like, it was amazing, etc.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
So they got that right. And Fassbender, like I said, he's the king of the neck bulge because he looks as furious as possible. And when he's enraged, he's not like snarly rage. It's that cold fury that's absolutely terrifying.
Yes.
And cold fury from Magneto to me is really in fitting with the character. So the keys, and obviously Wolverine, it was so good they've never recast him.
Mm-hmm.
But they got it right both times on Professor Xavier and Magneto. And then, of course, their final scene together was playing chess again.
Yeah, that's great. I like that.
What are some of the other things you thought they did right?
Gosh, I'm...
Here, while you think, here's a couple more that I have.
Yeah, let me think about that a little bit more.
So, and I've touched on a few of them already. I thought that but their intro in X-Men, by getting us to a sequel, which they then did even better, that was key because otherwise we don't get anything else after that. Or maybe we get a reduced version. And so I'm glad they did it the way they did. First Class was a great way to reset it, jumping into the past instead of, you know... And then saying, let's just keep it as part of the same continuity and maybe in time we can work out the kinks, which then they were able to do with Future Past and how they brought everything together. I loved seeing the same movie with with McKellen and Stewart and Fassbender and McAvoy all together in the same movie. Really, the single middle link was Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will say this. They got Deadpool right when they finally got it right by mining that comedic satire and spoof. They could spoof all superhero movies, which by the time Deadpool rolled around, they had a whole life of their own.
Yes.
And they got that right, and that's still one of the more enjoyable things, and I think we need that every once in a while to keep everything grounded in this was still originally stuff for kids, this was still, you know, in comic books. I mean, comic used to mean funny.
Right.
So those are the things I thought they did right.
Yeah, and let's be honest, had they not goofed Deadpool up in Wolverine Origins, that joke payoff would have we wouldn't have had that joke payoff in Deadpool 1.
No, that's true.
Which, honestly, in hindsight, I'm glad they goofed on him back then, because that was one of the best moments of Deadpool.
That actually leads into the things which I thought I wanted to discuss, what you thought they did wrong, and that was one of them. X-Men Origins Wolverine, it was a decent action movie, but it ruined all the side characters, and Wolverine had some great side characters, and it essentially took a goofball version of Deadpool just to say, hey, look, this is the only way we can do this is to just go, you know, kind of all to the wall goofy. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense. We had a guy who was mute, and by casting Ryan Reynolds to do it again, that kind of helps make it funny. Like, what the heck's going on here? They make fun of Green Lantern in it. They make fun of pretty much everything in it. So if we didn't have X-Men Origins Wolverine, we wouldn't get the Deadpool we know today. So that's a good thing. But it was still, as I watched it, I was like, this is a cool action movie. But as a comic book fan, I hated what they were doing in the background.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Absolutely.
And I thought Liev Schreiber was a good Sabretooth as far as, you know, how he could emote, but I would like to see Liev Schreiber do Sabretooth again, only with the CG that they could do to make him bigger and bulkier.
Right. Like, they had good ideas in that movie. They just didn't play them out the right way. They just went in weird directions, and it just was bad. It was the X-Men movie. For a long time, it was the X-Men movie everyone wanted to forget about. But then thanks to Deadpool, he kind of made it the butt of the joke.
And so now it's like, hey, I got to go rewatch that because now it's funny.
Exactly.
I thought that another thing they did wrong, and this was probably the first one that comes to everybody's mind, is The Last Stand. They tried to shoehorn two different stories into one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really what killed it, because it was hard to take what was such an iconic moment, what was such an iconic storyline of the Dark Phoenix storyline, and then just sort of have it be the side plot to, the cure for the mutants. And, you know, that movie also had one of the coolest scenes in the world where Magneto picks up the Golden Gate Bridge and drops it.
Yeah.
I thought that was just cool as heck, even when I watched it. Was that the first one where a post-credit stinger showed up? I think it was. Because
it could be.
We thought Xavier was dead after Jean, you know, sliced him up with glass. And
then at the
very end, you hear that person go, Moira, in Patrick Stewart's voice. And you're like, well, wait a second here.
That's right. That's right. I remember that now.
So, again, when they got something wrong, they still managed to get something right, as it turned out in retrospect. And then they couldn't pick a long-term direction at the same time that the Marvel Cinematic Universe was redefining how a superhero movie could be done. And I think that's what's ultimately hurt the franchise in where it stands today, was they just, it doesn't feel from what I've watched that they had a long-term direction. They were just making it movie to movie.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And the cinematic universe, Marvel Cinematic Universe says, look, if you can make a coherent storyline, people will pay to see it. And as Avengers, The Last Stand, ooh, that's blasphemy to say that right there, as Endgame... As Endgame proved, that can be a huge financial and emotional payoff for everybody involved when you do it like that.
Yeah.
And then my biggest beef, they never figured out how to use my favorite character, Cyclops. Maybe he's a victim of the Me Too era, of the redefining of gender roles and leadership and everything, but Cyclops was a great leader. He was somebody I always loved reading in the comics. I always thought it was the coolest to have I-beams of all the powers of the X-Men. I always thought I-beams were the coolest, personally. And he just never... I mean, in X2, despite that being my favorite movie, he turns into a zombie in the first minute of the show and never really does anything the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
In The Last Stand, they kill him in the first minute of the show because he had to go off and do Superman Returns with Bryan Singer. And then he's just sort of been a background character.
Yeah,
I mean, he's supposedly kind of in the lead now. He's part of the senior team, but he doesn't look like a senior team member. And other than sort of mildly lobbying for Jean and pining for Jean, he doesn't get to really lead at all, even though there's no Wolverine around anymore to say, oh, look, it should be Wolverine. I mean, there could have been a whole bunch of different things that they did with one of the great storylines of X-Men in the 80s was when Storm takes the team from Scott. He's half distracted, but they have a battle, and Storm doesn't even have her powers, and she still beats him. And then he takes a leave of absence from the team, and then that's when Jean Grey resurrects. It's a whole thing. But, you know, he never got to be a leader in 20 years, and that's one of my biggest disappointments is that I never got to see the Cyclops that is the ultimate X-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, playing off of that note, this will be one of my bads personally. Always growing up, Colossus was one of my favorites, and I never felt, until Deadpool, I really felt like he never got the due that...
I always wonder if that was just because it was too hard to make him look right.
Honestly, I think that was a big factor, because even from, is it X2? Last, is it
I
last,
think it's the Last Stand where we meet him the first time.
In Last Stand, he looks more like Colossus than he does in Days of Future Past. He's like completely silver. Like there's no, cross lines or cross sections, which he's always had in the comics.
Right.
That
which is one
really
of the cooler things about him. I don't know why it is, but I think he looks cooler with the lines than he does if he was just solid silver.
So when they finally got him right in Deadpool, I was so happy. And then the other thing was, again, they did redeem themselves, but it took them until Logan. I always felt like, and, you know, I get the movies aimed at kids and stuff, but I think I always wanted to see blood when he attacked, because if he has knife hands, you know, essentially.
Right.
So he never got the brutal attacks Wolverine's known for, because even, you know, in the comics, he's chopping heads off and arms off and legs off.
Yeah,
and,
but they didn't have to do that to show that. I mean, you know what Wolverine can do, and in the comics, they really didn't ever, not for a long time anyway, they were able to show Wolverine as a bad A without having to show him
saying. Like, I appreciate why they did it, but selfishly, I wanted to actually see him do it.
No, that's true.
Because that's how that was one of my favorite things about him when I read him in the comic books.
And we never got... Well, I mean, what did you think? Since I haven't seen Logan, did he really get to unload in Logan?
Oh, yeah, he does.
Is that what you wanted?
In the first 5 minutes, it satisfies you, yeah.
Okay, well, see, again, just when Fox doesn't do it right, they do manage to at least, you know, salvage themselves just a little bit. You know what? Fox is starting to remind me...
It's not like horrific violence. It's not horrific. It's just, you know, you'll see an arm fall off. You see him... When he'll see him physically stab through somebody, you know, it's like... That's kind of what they deliver on that front finally, and I think that's what made a lot of fans happy about that movie.
I will say that the visual that I want to say it was in X2 when it showed his fist and then the claws slowly coming out as if you were the person he was poking him at.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool, and it actually solved some physics questions that I had never realized that I had, which is where do the claws actually come out of his hand? I always thought they came out above the knuckle, but that shows that they come out between the knuckles, which makes more sense again, because where else would they go? I mean, where would
they? It's funny.
And the other thing is that they've never addressed is the claws have to go all the way back to his forearms or he'd never be able to bend his wrists when they're retracted.
But again, I had a flashback of that moment when he uses his claws to flip the bird. Like he just extends just the middle claw.
And so that reminds me too, something I had never thought of as a kid reading the comics was that Wolverine needed the healing factor in order to extend the claws, because otherwise it would cut.
Yeah.
It cut his hand every time they came out.
Every single time,
and it was the healing factor that kept him from just bleeding all over the place every time they came out. Did they show that in Origins? I don't remember.
In Origins, he had the bone claws, if you remember
right. Well, right. But, I mean, it showed blood when the bone claws came out, right?
Yeah. It caused him pain, for sure.
Okay. I'd have to rewatch that again. You know, there's some movies where I'm not in a big hurry to rewatch. That's another one of them.
There's a part in that movie where he's fighting, I think, a guy with a sword, and as he's using his bone claws, it always sends shivers down my spine, but as he's using his bone
sound?
Claws, and he, like, cuts his bone claws off with the sword, and I'm just like,
oh! No. That was in The Wolverine, and he chops...
That's what it is.
He chops off the metal ones.
Well, though, that does happen in that one, but it also happens when he has the bone claws, but the bones heal. It's just when they every time they would get cut off, and the thought of cutting bone off, you know, it's like that always gave me this shiver down my spine, like ugh.
Yeah, like when you see somebody get knocked in the apples. That
exactly.
You can't help but feel a certain way. No, that's a good point. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break, Christian. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about what do you want to see the Marvel Cinematic Universe do with the X-Men franchise now that they are once again under the whole Marvel umbrella, which, you know, you could say they should have been all along. But I have my own take on that. If you've already seen my Facebook post, then you know what I'm talking about, or Twitter. But I'm gonna reset that for our listeners, too. So we'll talk about that when we get back. Fan Effect, we're talking about X-Men, the history of the movies, and Dark Phoenix in particular. That sort of got it all started. But let's talk about now, Christian, what do you want to see the Marvel Cinematic Universe do with the X-Men? I'm curious to see what you would think. What are some of your thoughts?
Well, as much as I like Hugh Jackman, first I'll start with kind of what the backbone of the Fox franchise was. As much as I like Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, and, you know, we know he said he's done, I just think a hard reset of all the characters, even the cast, is, A, that's the best thing to do. I don't think they should bring anybody back.
Okay.
I do think it should become, story-wise, it shouldn't be attached to what we've had in the past, so it should basically be a complete reboot.
Okay.
And I don't know, It's hard for me to imagine the X-Men universe coinciding and, you know, combining with this Avengers universe, only because we haven't heard anybody talk about mutants, and, you know, I don't know how they would reintroduce that or how they would bring that up, or if they would not call them mutants and just call them enhanced, but then again, you can't call the X-Men mutants.
Exactly. Part of the problem is they've done a great job establishing the Marvel Cinematic Universe to where something of this magnitude would be difficult to explain that it's been there all along.
That's what I'm getting at, exactly. But at the same time, if the rumors pan out with Spider-Man Far From Home of a multiverse, that could open some doors.
Yes, that's what I think is going to end up being.
Parallel universe. I feel like that's the best and cleanest route they can take.
Where they're going to have some way to mash the two worlds together so that they straight up acknowledge, hey, you know, they weren't here all along. Wow, look at them. And maybe they start with a battle
universe,
against each other, perhaps. I don't know. That could certainly be cool. Avengers versus X-Men was a pretty good selling series in the early 2010s, early to mid 2010s. It was certainly a big crossover deal, and it involved the Phoenix Force as well. But that also built on years of continuity between the two, the franchises and characters.
Yeah, yes, I do think that if they were to start with X-Men, I don't think it would be wise for them to approach it like they did the Avengers, where they introduce individual characters and then combine them. I feel like the X-Men kind of have to exist or come together in the first movie. I don't know. That's my personal thought. I don't know.
So would you rather see them be introduced in their own movie that's done under the umbrella that then sets the table for a clash with the regular Marvel Universe? Or would you rather have them be introduced in them as like little pieces of it happening in current MCU established lines, and then they get their own movie? You'd prefer it that way?
I feel like they should be kind of like what Marvel has done, where they introduce them in one movie and then they get their own movie after.
See, and I'm thinking,
does that make sense?
Yeah. No. Yes. I do. I do think that makes sense. My brain is just starting to work here on a possible storyline, because I'm gonna save my rant for a minute because I want to explore this thought process real quick. So something that could work is the X-Men, whether they recast them or not, were never on Earth to begin with. I feel like that's really the only way that this could happen. However, they get them into the current Marvel Cinematic Universe, whether they use Doctor Strange, whether they use the Quantum Realm, or whether they use,
right,
you know, some other cataclysmic galactic power of some kind, you know, the snap opening a rift to the X-Men's reality. But I think that where it could be really cool is if a bunch of the mutants, especially the X-Men, are on this Earth, they're on our current Earth, the MCU Earth, whatever it is. And then they don't know what's going on. They don't know how they got there, but they do see powered people generally accepted, and they don't know, you know, they can see that a lot of them, well, most of them were artificially given, except for maybe the Inhumans. But Marvel's tried to pretend that never happened. But then they could just sort of like be in hiding, and then the rest of the world either sees them as aliens of some kind, like actual aliens, or, you know, people from another dimension, so that they're still outsiders, which then allows them to have, you know, the crux of X-Men. I mean, this is what made them so popular in the first place, was this whole people hate and fear them because they're different.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they became a metaphor for anybody who felt marginalized in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and even to today to a large part. In fact, if anything, in the comic books, especially in the 2000s and the late 90s, they really embraced that, you know, as the, you know, as gay marriage began to become a recognized thing around the country, and people who felt like they had to be in hiding for a long time felt a lot more bold and able to speak out publicly and be who they were publicly. And it, as it's blossomed from there, X-Men really kind of leaned into that, and the mutants went everywhere. And then at one point they decided, we got to at least rein it in the comics. And so they had the Scarlet Witch wipe out all but 90 of the mutants' powers.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became a whole thing. That was called Decimation. And then some mutants got their powers back. But that fueled comic storylines for several years in the mid-2000s. But that would keep that crux, because that's critical to the X-Men, is, you know, they have to be hated and feared by humanity. That way their choice to either defend humanity,
right,
or try to subjugate it is still there. So then they become kind of like Superman. If they're an off-world kind of arrival, are we going to stick up for humanity? Because we are humans from our own Earth. Maybe we, you know, we still have to make that choice of, will we try to defend humanity or are we going to ignore it? But that could be kind of interesting. That could be an interesting way to get them into the MCU.
Totally.
But I have
They don't necessarily, Marvel doesn't even necessarily have to connect them to the current MCU universe. They could just be, they could take over the reins and do a whole other X-Men universe and have a whole, you know, approach that like they've approached the MCU. You know, they don't have to tie it all together.
You know,
they
I'm glad you said
out a way
that.
Too, but I would actually like that if they kind of kept them separate.
I'm glad you said
that. I think it would
work
better.
Here's why. So this actually leads perfectly into my rant, almost as if we planned it. No. I believe, personally, that the X-Men are best served in their own universe. Now, whether they try to continue the storylines of 20th Century Fox, which I don't think they'll do, but even if they did, or whether they start over from scratch and say, this is a world where, you know, it's Earth 617 instead of Earth 616. This is borrowing a little bit from how DC Comics does things, which is,
right,
they just invent, you know what, let's have all the superheroes be bad guys and all the good guys be, or the bad guys be good guys in this world, and then they can write some stories that fit in with that. And if something sticks, then they pull them into the main universe. But I would like to see, personally, the X-Men stay in their own universe for the following reasons. One, they are the franchise best equipped to be their own universe. Think about movie universes up until now for superheroes.
Oh, absolutely.
Superman in 1978 kind of makes sense. An alien shot to this world, he's the only superpowered being on the planet.
Yes.
That's essentially what they went through in the Supermans 1, 2, 3, and 4, which the 3 and 4 are laughably bad, but Superman is the lone powered. Lex Luthor sees that as a threat because, hey, what if one day he doesn't want to be a good guy? And he tries to you know, salvage his own ego, his own strength, humanity, and take Superman down. Superman 2, other people from Krypton come and would obviously have the same powers. Now Superman has a chance to defend Earth against, you know, the invaders. Superman 3 is just a weird mess of a computer trying to stop Superman. And then Superman
right.
4 is Lex Luthor taking Superman's DNA and cloning him with nuclear bombs, which is ridiculous as it sounds. then you get Batman, where it supposes that Batman is a superhero, but because he doesn't have powers, it becomes believable then that with his gadgets and things that other people would have... would be able to oppose him. Then you get to Spider-Man. Now, I loved Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire. I liked Spider-Man with Andrew Garfield. Mm-hmm. But as far as an independent movie franchise, Fantastic Four was another one. Okay, the Fantastic Four get powers, and then Dr. Doom rises to oppose them. But then all of a sudden, Rise of the Silver Surfer happens, and there's this huge galactic threat that just happens to show up to Earth about the time the Fantastic Four get their powers. Well, that's really awfully yeah. convenient.
Yeah.
Spider-Man gets superpowers. He doesn't make sense as the only superpowered being in a universe. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that it should happen to him, and that he should be the first, and that it just happens to happen in 2002. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the logical leap as far as having a superhero exist doesn't make sense with Spider-Man being part of a universe where he is the only powered person.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So to defeat Spider-Man, you've got the Green Goblin, where a guy puts on a suit and has, you know, some really cool inventions. Then you get Dr. Octopus, where it's some mechanical things fused to his body. And then you have Venom, which is an alien. But then the Sandman, suddenly it starts to get ludicrous, like... And then even the Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man series, where they were trying to set up a larger universe with these powered villains, it kind of works. But Spider-Man makes more sense in a world of other people with superpowers.
Yes.
A kid from the Queens suddenly ending up with powers makes sense in a world where a whole bunch of other people get powers. It doesn't make sense in a world where nobody has powers.
I agree.
So... he makes sense as part of the cinematic universe, but the X-Men actually makes more sense separate from the Marvel Universe than it does as part of it, and here's why. This part has never made sense to me even when I was younger and even when I just had comics to go off of, let alone movies, where we dissect these things even more.
Right, yeah.
How could people hate and fear mutants, but be cool with Captain America, Spider-Man, Thor, Iron Man?
Yeah.
Why do they hate your neighbor that gets born with the ability to grow a wing out of his back, but they're cool with Tony Stark putting on a suit that allows him to fly around at the speed of sound? That disconnect has never made sense to me.
It doesn't make sense.
And if you want to preserve the X-Men as, you know, the balance between... I'm different, so they hate me. Will I still fight for them, or will I lash out back at them? I mean, that's the whole balance between Xavier and Magneto, is that question. What will I do? Yes, they have treated me poorly, but you know what? I know. It's almost like Xavier says, I know I could wipe out humanity. That's enough for me. I know I could do it, and I'm not going to. Now I'm going to prove that I'm better and stronger than that, because it's not a... A regular human doesn't have the ability to wipe out more than a handful of people at any given moment. And so the temptation has to be greater with the greater power.
Yeah.
And that's what Magneto represents. He controls one of the elements of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And he has used it to his advantage to you know, wipe out other people at times. But it's the greater power you have, the greater temptation you have to abuse it and use it selfishly. And so there's enough history of X-Men to mine for interesting stories. There's enough characters.
There's thousands of mutants.
And you can invent whatever you want. And I actually liked the idea, the way that the Marvel Cinematic Universe introduced Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch by making them powered by one of the Infinity Stones.
Uh-huh.
Although it does steal just a little bit of their of what makes them cool as characters by not having them be the son and daughter of Magneto.
Yeah.
And the fact that, I mean, they worked around it pretty well with Peter, Peter the Quicksilver in the X-Men universe, but...
Uh-huh.
the fact that those twins that are such a critical part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe aren't the children of Magneto, I thought they retconned it pretty well by making them created by Hydra, so they were created by the bad guys, and then they decided to be part of the good. So they were able to at least keep the DNA of
their origins,
even though it can't be, you know, the specific, all the attributes. But I just think that the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the X-Men universe make more sense existing side by side in their own. And then, you know, maybe then you can use your quantum realm to pull over Wolverine so he can fight with the Avengers sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just my opinion. But I just, I think it keeps the DNA of the X-Men and it keeps the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Go ahead.
I totally agree. I mean, I read the comics a lot, but what I was a bigger fan of when I was in my young teenage years was the cartoon, and the cartoon was pretty spot on as far as how I would love to see this cinematic universe play out. I mean,
this,
you know,
you
have, like you said, what's that?
Are you hearing this?
Yeah, dude, I love it so much. I just love, like you said, the struggle between humanity and them being outcasts, but still feeling the responsibility to fight and save them, and you know, going and there's mutant camps everywhere and they're rescuing mutants and some of them are being corrupted or brainwashed, and it's just such a rich, you could pull so many different stories out of that whole situation. So I would love to see them, like you say, go parallel and not necessarily cross into it originally. Maybe eventually, but I think it would work better by itself.
And that's my biggest argument. I do trust Kevin Feige and all those guys. I think they'll do a good job with the characters, whatever they decide to do with them. I'm not really worried, but I actually would honestly prefer to see the X-Men in a separate universe, just because then there's none of that pressure of, you know, hey, if this is happening with Magneto, why isn't Thor and Iron Man there?
Yeah.
And because that question will hover over everything. I mean, that happened even right after the original Avengers, and then Iron Man 3 happens, and everybody's like, where was War Machine?
Yeah.
And then they have to find a way to explain it. And so it would be hard to say, oh, they were here all along. Oh, well, really? Where were they? And how come nobody noticed? And, you know, these are too powerful of people. And I just like that you can have a humanity that can hate the mutants or like the mutants, but it's just based on the mutants only.
Uh-huh.
And this idea that the Kree have helped create powers on the Earth as part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that works too. And since they've never touched on like the Shi'ar Empire, you can send the X-Men into space, which is what people thought, that Jessica Chastain was going to play a character named Lilandra, who was the empress of a whole starfaring empire called the Shi'ar, and that's actually where Scott Summers' dad went. Is he, long story, he ended up in space as part of a rebellion group for that empire.
Oh, gotcha.
And that's one of the reasons Scott's never been able to control his powers, was that he and his brother Alex were shoved, and Alex is dead in the X-Men universe. He was the guy that threw those energy bolts from his chest.
Oh, yeah, Havoc?
Yeah. So that was Scott's brother in the comics, and they got pushed out of an airplane because the airplane was going to crash, and then what ended up happening was a spaceship beamed up him and his wife to their spaceship. Scott and Alex fall to the ground. Scott hits his head and never has the control over his eye beams, which is why he always has to wear the visor or the sunglasses. So they have a whole, they could go into space. I mean, they could literally create a separate universe that runs parallel to the Marvel Cinematic Universe with a lot of the same element kinds of things.
Yeah.
And have it be a rich history that doesn't feel like something's missing.
Totally.
So that's my rant.
Yeah, I'm with you. I stand by you on that.
And then one last thing that I want to see the Marvel Cinematic Universe do with the X-Men, get them a recognizable musical cue on the soundtrack. If the thing you associate with X-Men is your cartoon from the 1990s and you have no other piece of music that you could say, oh yeah, that's from X-Men, that's going to keep, that's, I believe that's going to hold you back. You name me.
I know, it's
a
true
superhero movie that didn't have an awesome musical score to accompany it that is identifiable immediately.
Right.
And I'll tell you all the ones that didn't have one, and they're all forgettable. Superman had a great one, John Williams, to the point where it's almost impossible to not play that one.
Right.
Batman has had two great ones, Danny Elfman and Hans Zimmer.
Yep.
Spider-Man.
For me, one of the things I think I'm most looking forward to with Marvel having the X-Men back in their hands is their suits. Are we finally going to get some non-ridiculous looking suits?
You didn't like the X jackets here from...
No, I've hated every X-Men suit we've had so far.
Well, they've proved that you can do the colorful ones.
Yeah.
Although it's funny, I saw somebody tweet the other day, and then it was like 2000. Hey, what do you want to do? Yellow spandex? And everybody's like, yeah, that's true. 2019, bring us all the yellow spandex.
Exactly. Well, in the first X-Men suit was like a leather onesie. It's like a...
No, it was a zipped-up jacket.
A motorcycle outfit.
It was
outfit.
Like that. It was like that, though. That's true. And I don't... Anyway. I was never a fan of the comic version of those X jackets, which were... So that's... It's funny that that's what they were wearing here in Dark Phoenix, because those jackets in the comics were done as sort of a bridge between what was in the comics in the late 90s and then the movie outfits that they wore. This crossed them over, so you got some of the bright colors, but with the jackets that they were wearing in the movie, because they always try to keep the comics and the movies not too dissimilar, so that hopefully people who've seen the movies will want to go pick up the comics.
Right, right.
When Spider-Man was going to do the Venom version with Topher Grace, suddenly he went back to the black costume in the comics just for a few months.
Right,
and it,
right,
you know, right. Just done to goose sales. But I didn't mind the yellow X jackets, but it would be cool to see them in their iconic suits. And maybe now that Marvel owns them again, we'll get to see that.
Yeah, maybe we'll even get to see Wolverine in his brown and yellow suit with the wings on the side of his head for once.
His hair is almost done. His hair is almost done that itself, but...
I know.
What do you think Deadpool? Deadpool's someone who could hop into either one where it wouldn't...
He could hop into either one. And you know what's funny? I was talking to my friend about this. In Deadpool 1, even though it's technically not part of the MCU canon, they have one of those air carriers in it, which is kind of a like... almost like a bootleg tie-in to Avengers.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean, they could weasel themselves in and just consider them part. But then again, you have the problem with the X-Men being in there, and it just, yeah, it kind of...
Our co-host, Adam Thomas, who's not here for this episode, but he had an idea when we were going to see Endgame. He's like, wouldn't that be cool if the post-credit scene was like Deadpool running into the frame? Like, okay, guys, I just got here. I'm ready.
Hilarious.
And then, like, he looks around, he's like... I missed it off. And then before he could finish the word, it cuts to the credits.
It cuts to
the final, because this would be after the credits, obviously, because you wouldn't want
to
diminish the emotional impact. But and it wouldn't work, obviously, just because, you know, what they did, which was the hammering of Iron Man's armor. And, you know, people are still emotionally coping. But it would have been hilarious. Maybe we'll get to see some kind of version of that in one of the other movies.
Yeah.
That could be kind of funny. Well, all right.
We shall see.
Those are our thoughts, X-Men Dark Phoenix. We'd like to know what you think. If you joined the podcast from one of our links on Facebook or Twitter, we'd invite you to become a subscriber through Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or Spotify, and share us with your friends. We'd love it. Christian Odland, our writer for Geek Tyrant and Nerdist, and the 1 Minute Critic on Instagram and YouTube, thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks, Andy. It was fun talking about X-Men.
We will have you back for sure for other things, and there's a lot still coming up this summer that's to talk about. We still got Far From Home coming soon, and technically, I guess we have one more X-Men movie, if they ever release it. They've moved it back so many times already, but The New Mutants technically still falls with 20th Century Fox. So
that could easily end up on a streaming service and never hit theaters. Who knows?
The number of times that they've moved it already, I would not be surprised at all, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if we never saw it anywhere except on video. All right. Yeah. Well, I do want to play something. And if that's the last time we get to hear that iconic open, well, it's
rest,
had a good
rest
run.
In peace.
Rest in peace. All right, thanks, Christian. We'll catch you in the next episode.
All right, thank you, Andy.